Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome to another edition of the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal. I am Neil McCready. As promised today on the show, an NFL preview. You're hearing this on Thursday. The NFL season gets started tonight. Atlanta at Philadelphia. The Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champs, kick off the 2018 NFL season at home. Mike Dettillier of WWL, part of the New Orleans Saints, pre- and post-game crew there on WWL, NFL draft analyst. He just does a tremendous job covering both college and pro football. He joins us for about 45 minutes here in a minute. We talked about 20 minutes of college football, LSU, Auburn, Ole Miss, Alabama, Michigan, Notre Dame. Got to a lot of topics inside those programs and more. Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, there's a lot there. If you like college football, you'll love the first part of the podcast. And then if you like the NFL, you should stick around. We talk about Le'Veon Bell, Khalil Mack, the Saints, Teddy Bridgewater, the Chargers, the Rams, Falcons, a lot of NFL topics. We get to all of it in about 45 minutes with Mike Dettillier. If you like football, you'll love this show. If you don't like football, you probably should leave. I'm being perfectly honest. It's all football. Really good. I think you'll like it. He gives a Super Bowl pick that might surprise you. Might dovetail with somebody else's Super Bowl pick from earlier in the last month or so. Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's Highway 6 West in Oxford. It's right next door to the Oxford Exxon. You can fill up at the Oxford Exxon, fill up at the Oxford Crystal. You're coming in for Ole Miss Southern Illinois this weekend. On your way in, you can grab that three-egg plate combo. Maybe if you're coming in Friday morning or you're leaving on Sunday morning. If you're coming in on Friday, coming in on Saturday, grab the Crystal $2 square meal, the $3 square meal, the $4 square meal. It's all there. If you're real hungry or you got a car full, the 12 Crystal combo. 12 crystals, 2 medium fries, 2 medium drinks. Purchase a large drink for a chance to win concert tickets. It's the Sprite concert giveaway presented by Crystal. So all of that this weekend at the Oxford Crystal. Coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling, no hassle. You get your quote. You can shop it around, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many others, self-included, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great Ford product, great service after the sale. Delivery options. Corey just wants to be your car guy, your truck guy. He'll take great care of you. And then at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden podcast. You'll save an additional $500 on your great deal at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. We're also brought to you by Community Mortgage. Community Mortgage is located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you know you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So get in touch with Jason Lowe at Community Mortgage and ask him about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's J-Lowe, it's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Now, Mike Dettillier on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. All right, Mike, I promised my listeners that I would get to the NFL, and I will. The NFL season, when people hear this, starts tonight. We're taping this on Wednesday, so in case something changes, it's not Mike not knowing something. It things changed in 24 hours. But before I get to the NFL and the start of the NFL season and some of the hot button topics in the NFL, I just want to get some quick thoughts from you on week one of the college football season. And I kind of want to start in your neck of the woods down there with the game that I know you watched with keen interest on Sunday night. LSU, to a lot of people, self-included, certainly looked better than I anticipated that LSU would look. Defensively, they looked great. Offensively, I thought Burrow did a good job kind of managing the offense. They ran the ball well. How much of that was LSU being better than we thought they were? And how much of that was perhaps Miami not being the caliber of opponent that some people like myself maybe thought they would be?
Probably a little bit of both. You know, I thought LSU would win the game, but I thought it would be a touchdown game. You know, the crazy thing about this is I probably did 11, maybe 12 national shows from Friday all the way up until kickoff. Zero picked LSU to win. None. I mean, so I was lone wolfing this. And, you know, my feeling was I haven't went to a couple of practices and you know, and knowing a couple of the coaches a little bit, so to speak, their defense is really good. And their front seven, and I've said this and written it before, it's the best I've seen at LSU in the past 6-7 years. Now, it took a blow losing Kalavion Chaisson. He's a rare tiger out on the hoof. But there aren't many like him in college football. But this is a team with a lot of depth, real physical. Secondary is sort of young, but they got some talent there. So I knew they could play defensively. What none of them knew, even the coaches didn't know how well the offense would or how quickly that would come around. They were very confident in Joe Burrow in that you know, even Coach O brought this up to me. He said, you know what? He's got Peyton Manning-type work ethic. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm telling you, he's got that type of work ethic, like Peyton Manning. He'll spend three and a half hours watching film, you know, kind of breaking things down. You know, but, you know, he grew up in that environment with his dad as a former player and a coach. And, you know, his uncle was a former player at Ole Miss, so he grew up in that environment. But how quickly all that would come together was certainly a question mark. And even their offensive line, it was erratic play. But big plays from Nick Brossette. You had three drops in the game, which I know Jerry Sullivan won't like at the receiving corps, but I think the breakout guy, and I've written about this also, is Justin Jefferson. He isn't the biggest, fastest, strongest guy around, but he makes plays and he catches the ball. Two young freshman receivers who have a lot of talent. So I think that came around very quickly, but it was all sort of started by the defense and special teams. And I give Greg McMahon a lot of credit. They brought him in to run the special teams. He had been with the Saints for a long time. And he was the one who strongly recommended to Ogeron to sign Cole Tracy, even if it was for 1 year, and that's what it is, as your place kicker, and also, too, to bring in a walk-on kickoff guy that he thought really could do the job, and they set up field position extremely well. So they won with the turnover battle. There were plus two there. They won in the special teams part of the game. And when you get six tackles for losses and four quarterback sacks, you're doing your job. So it came as a surprise because I think the score doesn't show just how dominant LSU was throughout the game. But, you know, Miami didn't play very well. And that I'm surprised because when you got that long to prepare, LSU wasn't a complicated offense by any stretch. And, man, you know, if I'm Mark Richt, I'm pretty disappointed in how my team reacted in week one. And so I think it's a little bit of a combination of both. But Tigers are going to be good on defense. And special teams has come around. And you saw the poise of Joe Burrow. And you talk to guys on the team, and they just kind of give you a wink and a nod. Hey, you know, he's the coolest cat they got out on the field. And I think that is the big thing you see in SEC play this year. That is the difference. This league has always been a dominant league to run the football, stop the run. It's been what they've built, you know, kind of the bricks on. And yet this year, you take a look, they have the other element of the gunslinger passer. And across the league, you look at what Tua brings to the table at Alabama. He's a different level quarterback than Jalen Hurts from a passing standpoint. I think Drew Lock at Missouri, I think he could well contend to be the top overall pick in the 2019 draft. And what Jake Bentley has done at South Carolina, Jake Fromm as a sophomore at Georgia has just been tremendous. You look at what Jordan Tuma has done for Ole Miss. Katon Thompson, you know, in a backup role comes in and how well he plays for Fritz. I mean, you know, he comes in there and he does a really good job. And I saw him play so much. You know, he's a Louisiana young man.
Yeah.
And you just look at it, what happened at Texas A&M. Now, they got quite a test this weekend with Clemson. But that's the big difference this year. You got guys, and not just a couple, you got a host of them that can really sling the football in the Southeast Conference. And listen, it varies year to year. Maybe sometimes another conference can contend for a year of maybe being the best conference. But year in, year out, SEC is the dominant conference. And now you've got the element that had been missing for so long, the guy that can really put it up in the air and make a play late to win you a game at the most critical position out on the field. And LSU has that guy. I think Joe Burrow's the guy for him.
The comparison between Jordan Ta'amu and – let me pronounce it correctly because I've been getting some criticism. Jordan Ta'amu and Shea Patterson will go on forever. They're linked inextricably for the rest of their careers. It's these one-game reactions that I know are sure to go wrong. Did the Ole Miss fans who are saying, hey, Ole Miss came out on the right end of this quarterback deal, getting Ta'amu and losing Patterson, are they overreacting to one game, or is it possible they're on to something?
No, they're on to something. That, you know, and I got the chance to be around Ta'amu when he was at the Manning camp. And Jordan, you know, he had told me one of the things he really worked on, because I brought it up to him that he had gotten off to some rough starts in games, and he said, yeah. He said, you know, a lot of that, he said, I got to pin on me. I got to be more prepared and more ready to come out of the gate quicker. And so I think that he's a good fit. He understands he's not playing with a dominant defense. And so I think there's a mindset. You know, I think Shea was a little bit different. Shea, I think, felt as though, hey, I'm carrying everything. I'm carrying all the water. I think one thing with Jordan is you can almost hear it in his voice and his body language that, hey, man, listen, I got some playmakers out there. I just got to do my job and get the ball to AJ and get the ball to Lodge and get the ball to Metcalf. And I don't have to be, you know, fancy about doing it. I just got to do my job, but I got to do it quicker in games. And he answered the question very well when I brought it up to him. And you could see, it, you know, I think he understood that also. But he's a real talented passer. I remember when he came out, I'd been questioned by some people at Louisiana Tech who were trying to pursue Jordan at that point. And so we all had a favorable nod on him. It was just that once Ole Miss got involved, you know, they trumped the Bulldogs at that point, because I think at one time maybe Louisiana Tech had a bead on him. They thought maybe they could get him. But I don't think the overreaction is there. He knows where to put the football. He's become much better on the timing part of the game. And, again, how he kind of looks at himself that, hey, listen, I don't have to be great, you know, and I don't have to make all kind of plays with my feet. All I got to do is be accurate, and those other guys are going to come through for me. And I think he's got a little bit of a running game, which he hinted to, that, hey, listen, I think we're going to run the football a little bit better than some people think. So I think, you know, listen, the man upstairs sometimes puts you in the right place at the right time. And for Jordan, it was the right time for him, and he's really going to do a good job. for Ole Miss. I never understood why Shea went to Michigan. Never. That didn't make sense to me then. It doesn't to me today. He would have been much better going off to a Pac-12 school that would have used him on the rollout, used him throwing the football 35, 40 times a game. That's not going to happen at Michigan under Harbaugh. So, but that was Shea's decision to do it. And sometimes fit has a lot to do with your production. And I think that's where you can make a pretty good argument that right now, Jordan's the better fit for Ole Miss.
Let me ask you about Shea quickly, because you're right. This deal at Michigan, and the other element in the Michigan thing is, look, I don't think Jim Harbaugh is on the hot seat, if you will, right now. But it's getting warmer, and at some point you do have to live up to some of the hype. You do have to win. You've got to beat Ohio State. You've got to do some of those things that he's not been able to do. I don't know how patient he can be with Shea Patterson, and you're right. Shea doesn't really fit his offense, and it's difficult for me to imagine that, as you just mentioned, that Jim Harbaugh is going to change it all that much. I mean, Jim Harbaugh's kind of who he is. He's not going to scrap everything and fit everything around a given player, whether it's Shea Patterson or anyone else. So how do if you're inside that building at Michigan, you're inside those offensive meeting rooms, how do you make this work?
Well, Harbaugh's hard-headed. In a lot of ways, he reminds me a lot of Jim Mora when he was with the Saints. That were certain things that he was going to do, and he wasn't going to change, no matter what you told him. You know, it was going to be run a certain way and done a certain way. I've always looked at Shea as a guy that you got to move him around a little bit and take advantage of his ability to create plays with his feet. And the way he throws the football, throwing it 20, 25 times a game ain't going to work. I mean, you're going to have to let him sling it. And even using the short pass like an extended handoff, which when you watch Pac-12 football, if it's USC or UCLA or even Washington does a lot of it, Oregon certainly has done it throughout the years, they do that. That's not what Michigan does. Harbaugh isn't going to adapt to the quarterback. The quarterback's going to adapt. He's going to go down doing it his way, bottom line. No matter what, he's going to do it his way. And I wonder a little bit about that fit with Shea. And, you know, he's going to give Shea every opportunity again to be the guy. But lose another big game, and you wonder if he's not going to say, you know what, we've tried this, it ain't working, and I'm going to go with my number two guy, who's maybe a better fit for what I want to do offensively. But if you think Harbaugh's going to change, you can forget it. Yeah, he's never been that type of guy. That's going to fit what is best a quarterback does to his scheme. He's more, you adapt to me. And that reminds me a lot of what Jim Mora did here with the Saints. He was successful, but then it sort of caught up to him when his defenses weren't as good. And I'm not sure how good Michigan's defense is. I think up front they're good, but I think they got a lot of holes in the secondary.
Other side of that game, I thought Notre Dame looked a little better than what a lot of people thought. Certainly looked, much faster on defense, at least, than I had remembered them being last year. Are they a candidate to be kind of a surprise team nationally?
Yeah, I think they are. I got a chance to talk to Brian. He was in New Orleans for a clinic, and he was very optimistic about his defense. He felt that they were young, they were fast, they were physical. And he said, listen, we're going to play good defense and good special teams. Again, they want to run the football. And he said, you know, we put in a lot of different packages in the short game. He said, I think that's what we're going to be able to do. Because they did lose a couple of big, really tall receivers. So he said, you know, we were able to kind of spread the field out a little bit because, you know, you got some receivers who are 6'5 plus. That's difficult to match up against. But, you know, they play a difficult schedule, and they're used to kind of going through that meat grinder schedule-wise. But I think they're a good football team. I think they're a double-digit winning team this year. I don't know they're a national contending team, meaning that they would be in that Final Four, but I think that they're going to be a pretty tough out for anybody that plays them. And they going back, I think, similar to what we've seen the winning teams at Notre Dame do a lot, and that is really good defense, run the football, solid special teams. Now, if they start to get in these shootout games, then that's where, you know, the bear trap catches them. But I don't know how many of those type games you really are going to see them in. But I think they're a 10-win football team, and they're a good team. They're a really good football team. And I think Brian finally understands what he's got talent-wise and has played up to that talent level. And not trying to sling the ball all over with that. That's not Notre Dame football.
I want to get your just quick thoughts on a couple of games that are coming up. Two this week, and then two that are a week away. That I think, especially one, the one in Auburn, can absolutely be fascinating. Does South Carolina have any chance at home Saturday of beating Georgia?
I think they do. I wouldn't pick it, but I think they got a shot there. They got to hope that Georgia turns the ball over. You know, I think that's the great equalizer if it does happen. I think Georgia wins in a close game, to be honest. But, you know, you can see what they've done here, and I think Georgia's secondary is going to have some difficult times matching up with the receiving core of the Gamecocks. But you know what? I've seen this before, and the talent level of Georgia is really good. But they've been kind of geared for this game now, understanding just how good South Carolina is. So I suspect it'll be a very close game. Georgia wins it late, maybe something in the special teams part of the game wins it for Georgia. But I think South Carolina gives them everything they want and a little more. And it wouldn't shock me to see the upset, but I'm not calling that. I think Georgia wins in a very close football game. And Muschamp, listen, you got to give him a lot of credit. When he came there, there were a lot of critics, a lot of them, about how well, you know, he could pull this off there. And having that big dog in the yard alongside of you in Clemson, the way they recruit, he's done a fabulous job, really, really good job at South Carolina.
The last time Kentucky went to Florida and won, it was the Jefferson administration. Can they have any chance at all to get Dan Mullen in year one in Gainesville?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they win it this year.
Wow.
They're a really good defensive team. They can move the football. There's still some turbulence in the water at certain spots at Florida. And if you're going to catch them, you better catch them now. And, you know, here you've had a team on the ropes a couple years and just not being able to put them away. I think this is the year Kentucky beats them in a very close game. But I think the Wildcats are another one of these teams that it's not your typical Kentucky Wildcat football team. They play great defense. They are really fast at the football. They've got a quarterback that can turn the engine over on the car, and he can make some plays with his feet, not only with his arm. So I look for Kentucky to win this weekend over Florida.
Okay, the two that I want to talk about just real quick for that come up next week, LSU at Auburn. Suddenly has a different kind of a feel to it. Auburn gets a big win over Washington. We talked about LSU's win over Miami. The winner of LSU-Auburn kind of sets themselves up to be that primary contender to Alabama, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing with that is you look at the history of this rivalry, and over the last 10 or 12 years, Auburn hasn't beaten LSU in Baton Rouge, and LSU's had all kind of difficulties on the road when they play Auburn. And so, you know, you look at it, I would certainly give the nod to Auburn here. Again, LSU's offensive line, I think, is still a work in progress, and it may take a little while for that to come together. And then now you've lost your starting right tackle in Adrian McGee for 3 weeks. So, you know, Auburn, you know, and again, Stenham, you got to give them the advantage at the quarterback position over Burrow. Stenham's done it. I think LSU would want Burrow to be what Stenham did a year ago. And so, but it's been a strange rivalry between the two where, man, home field advantage has meant everything to both of these clubs. But I agree with you. I think that you know, and you look at LSU's schedule, even though you would win against Auburn, you got Louisiana Tech and Ole Miss, then Mississippi State comes up, and then Georgia and then Alabama, and then A&M at the end of the season. It's a pretty good meat grinder, but you know, right now I'd give Auburn the edge. I just think their defensive line going up against LSU's offensive line is going to win, and they have an advantage at quarterback with Stenham over Burrow at this stage. So it sets up quite a meeting, it would be, as somebody who I worked with for almost 20 years would say, the ultimate under game.
Yeah.
Both defenses, yeah, the way they play.
Man, Auburn's defense is salty. All right, last one, and then we're going to get to the NFL, I promise. Ole Miss gets Alabama here in week and a half. Obviously, Alabama beat Ole Miss by 9 touchdowns a year ago. I'm not asking can Ole Miss win the game. Can Ole Miss keep that game respectable?
Yeah, I think it's a close game. You know, with Alabama still got a young secondary, and I think that's where they'll have the distinct advantage now. They got to block up front because, you know, when you got Bugs and Raekwon Davis, those guys coming at you, you know, that's a tough one. But I think they can hit on some big plays downfield. Again, you got to stop people, though, too. And Tua brings an element that Ole Miss has not seen in years to go up against Alabama, and that man Tagovailoa can he can sling it, and that element along with that power running game, it's going to be tough to beat. Now again, turnovers are always a great equalizer, but while I think Ole Miss will keep this game close because of the skill set of the receivers, it's going to be a shootout game between these two teams.
We take a break from Mike Dettillier. We'll get back to his NFL talk here in just a moment. First, let me tell you, this podcast is brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. 662-259-2999 is the number. Call Greg Jones. Tell Greg what you want this weekend. Maybe you are having a pregame party, if you will, on Friday night before Ole Miss and Southern Illinois. Call Greg, tell him what you want. He'll have it ready for you. Go by, pick it up, and you're out the door and to your grill, to your smoker, whatever it may be. Maybe you're doing some things on Saturday to get ready for the game. Maybe you're going to have a late night grill on Saturday night after Ole Miss and Southern Illinois. Greg can take care of you. Just call him ahead of time. Go in. They've got the freshest cuts in all of Oxford. The bone and ribeyes are spectacular. You'll love them. We do. The filet mignon is great. Strip steak, briskets, ground round, whatever you want. Poultry from Joyce Farms. The pork, locally raised pork from Home Place Pastures in Como. Fresh seafood coming up from the Gulf. It's there as well. You got to try some of the sausages, whether it's as an appetizer or as a meal. I love the chicken sausage, the ribeye sausage, the flying pig. It's all there. Smoked sausage as well. They're at LB's Meat Market, 662-259-2999 across from Kroger. There's a beer fridge on your left when you walk into LB's. Make a six-pack. Make an assorted six-pack, whatever you want to do. And then tell Greg that you heard about LB's on the podcast, on the Beer Garden podcast, and you'll save $3 on your $6. You get a six-pack for $6, normally $9. So you'll save $3 just by saying you heard about it on the Beer Garden. We would appreciate that as well. This podcast is also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency, works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM works. It's really good. It's really different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. Their writing, the production, the editing, it's all done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. Also, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm, so give them a call and see just how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Send him an email, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. a popular trip for visitors that don't have as much time as the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail. Sometimes that's called blackfish. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John 228-348-7817. Now back to Mike Dettillier and some NFL talk here on the Billy's Pecans Hotline on the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. All right, let's get to the NFL, Mike. And again, I really appreciate the time you're spending with us. The NFL big story over the weekend was Khalil Mack. Oakland letting him go, trading him to Chicago. I guess, and I know you've done this on a lot of other shows, but just your thoughts on the deal. What does it mean for the Bears, and what does it mean for the Raiders?
Well, it goes to show the ego of John Gruden got involved here. You got to pay big-time players. And what message did that send to the other guys in the locker room that, you know, Khalil Mack, he hasn't been a good player. He's a dominant player. Even Coach Payton brought this up to us, that when they went up against him to start the season a couple of years ago, and he said, it's been rare we've ever done this, we came up with a Mack, what he would call a Mack protection. In essence, we were trying to do things to make sure that he was not the guy to make the play. And he said, you know, every once in a while you got to go up against a guy who's that good. And so I don't get it, other than the ego of John, again, thinking no matter what, you know, I'm going to transform this team in my own image and that sort of thing. But I think it's a bad start for him. And it takes away one of the signature players in pro football. Yeah, you got draft choices, but can you pick well enough to make up for that? And, again, it goes down to someone's ego. And I think at this point, you know, you spend 10, 11 years in the booth, and, you know, you sort of think everybody talent-wise is fairly close and I can plug and play. And you find out real quick when you get back on the field that ain't the case. So I think for the Bears, they understood they're in an arms race, and they're caught in it, just like what you see the build-up of talent with the Eagles and the Rams and the Vikings and the Packers and the Saints and the Falcons. Hey, listen, I got to get in a fight here, so to speak. And I think that's what the Bears think, that, you know, with the young quarterback, and now we've got some pieces up front defensively with Goldman, with Roquan Smith, with Akeem Hicks. Now you bring in Khalil Mack. Hey, if you can get your offense straightened out, you got something there. And you got to stay in the hunt. And I know that's how Ryan Pace feels, the general manager. Ryan was here for so many years with the Saints.
Sure.
That we got to keep up some kind of way. And so it's an interesting trade on the Bears' part, because it certainly gives them a signature player who's still in the prime of his career. I just don't get it from the Raiders' standpoint to think that just anybody can take Khalil Mack's spot. And I think that's in Gruden's head, that he feels, hey, I can get anybody to take his spot. And listen, Arden Key's a good football player, but he's had injury issues, motivational issues, that sort of thing at LSU, and he's got to prove it in a regular NFL game. But, again, it's Gruden being Gruden, and I think for Raider fans, I think if you thought your team was going to be a contender this year, I think the Khalil Mack trade signals to you that the Broncos, you know, they're still in your neighborhood, but the Chiefs and the Chargers are better.
Does it tell you
and now considerable better without Mack?
Yeah, for sure. Does it tell you that the Bears believe in Trubisky even more than maybe people thought they did?
Well, I know in talking to Ryan, he firmly believes that Mitch Trubisky is the guy. And he's told me, Mike, listen, Mitchell is going to be our guy. And, you know, like you said, listen, we got some lack of experience here from him playing. He's really only a one-year starter at North Carolina. We kind of managed things with him last year. And now we've got some extra weapons for him on offense. And they've got a good running game. It's just they need to do better in the passing part of the game for him. And bringing in Robinson from Jacksonville and Trey Burton certainly will help. But, you know, you look, they played in a lot of close games last year because their defense and their running game kept them there. Now, can Mitchell make plays in the passing game? I think that's going to be the big question mark for the Bears. But they understand staring at the Vikings and the Packers, as long as Aaron Rodgers is standing up and the Vikings have what they have on defense, and they've got some big-time weapons on offense now too, and if Dalvin Cook is back healthy, that's another element. Can you just do this via the draft? You know, you got to make a splash somewhere, and I think that's why they decided, hey, listen, this is a once in a maybe 15-year opportunity to grab a guy this good. Let's make this deal, and let's try to close the gap on Minnesota and also Green Bay.
As we tape this, Le'Veon Bell still holding out. I know that's affected a lot of fantasy football drafts. How does it affect the Steelers, and how do you anticipate it being resolved?
Well, he's going to eventually come into play. But, you know, it's a situation where, you know, he's put great value on himself. I'm not sure running backs in today's market are going to get that type of money. When you look at it today, they are paying receivers and pass rushers almost in the same area code as quarterbacks. But running backs, they're not getting that kind of dough. Every once in a while, you'll get a nice deal. But I just think that for Bell, the Steelers were a perfect fit for him. And offensively, in how they use their backs as not only runners but receivers. And I think it was a great fit. It just, you know, he's been the guy, along with his agent, that just has not been able to figure it out, that he's not going to get what he's asking for. And I think they've made strides to try to get this deal done on the Steelers side. It's just, you know, I think Bell and his agent have played hardball, and he's not going to get that type of money from Pittsburgh or anyone else in the NFL. He's kidding himself if he really believes that. But he's such a vital part of the Steelers offense because, man, in the fourth quarter, and he's run the football 25 times, you sure in the world don't want tackling him, you know, 26, 27, 28th carry, because he just wears you out, you know, and he's such a big man as a runner. He's a great fit for what the Steelers do. He comes back, but I wonder a little bit about the focus with him. And he's also had some off-the-field issues, which he's got to understand that that's in his court. He put himself in that spot, and maybe why the total commitment to him isn't there.
My friend and colleague Chase Parham, I think he is confused and a little concerned about the Saints' acquisition of Teddy Bridgewater. He wanted me to ask you, is this the Saints just maximizing a window, or is it possible that they view Bridgewater as the quarterback of the future? And if you're a Saints fan, how should you view that move?
Well, it was short-term and long-term ramifications. Short-term, it's an expensive insurance policy for a 39-year-old quarterback. And if you look at history in this league and where would the Eagles have been last year without Nick Foles, what happened to the Packers when Aaron Rodgers went down? What has happened to the Colts organization since Andrew Luck has had the shoulder and arm issues? It's come apart at the seam. What has happened to the Broncos, even with an aging Peyton Manning? Look what's happened to that franchise. So I think, you know, Sean looks at this and says, you know what, we all chips in. We got a two-year window here. So let's throw it in here and let's make this move. And I think for most reporters and people covering the team, they understood that, you know, Tom Savage is what he is. If he plays in the league, he's going to be a career backup. And Taysom Hill is who he is. He's a Pro Bowl special teams player and a career backup. Man, I never bought any of that baloney about, you know, he's a developmental quarterback. I want someone to explain to me how a pro-style quarterback in high school who went 4 years to Brigham Young in a pro-style system now all of a sudden has become a developmental quarterback in the NFL. I want somebody to explain me that. Every quarterback has a learning curve. But, man, I'm not buying this. And I know Sean's flinging it to certain reporters about it. But, man, come on. I've done this way too long to bite into that. If he was that sold on Taysom Hill, he would have never made that trade for Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy has started in this league. He's won in this league. He's a perfect fit for them offensively. In that what Teddy excels at is in the short intermediate part of the game. That's what he does really well. He throws that short intermediate pass very well, real sharp, great leader. And I wouldn't say it's 100%, but I bet it's 99.9 that Mickey Loomis and the people for Teddy Bridgewater talked even before the trade on trying to extend the contract one more year. Now, you're talking about a 41-year-old Drew Brees now. I had a conversation with Archie Manning in the summer, and Archie was telling me that, you know, Peyton never asked him about advice on anything. And he said, you know, his final year in the NFL, he said, Pop, he said, I'm going to play one more year. What do you think? And Archie said, you know, it kind of caught me off guard. He's like, Peyton, the only thing I can tell you is the NFL ain't for a 40-year-old man. And he said, you know, both him and Peyton both started to laugh. And I said, Mike, I take that back. I did see Tom Brady play last year. So he said, you know, there are exceptions to the rule. But he said, you know, bottom line is it's difficult, really difficult to play at that same level. Because he said, you know, no matter how well they protect you, your body gives out. And so I think this was a short-term and a long-term move by the Saints to solidify their quarterback position with Teddy Bridgewater. And Sean, I think, is indicating that in every which way possible, that he understands what he had as a backup in Savage, who isn't here anymore and isn't in the NFL anymore currently. And Taysom is a tremendous athlete, real sharp young man, maybe pound for pound the strongest guy on the team. But you know what? You want a passer who's accurate from the pocket. And what you got in Taysom Hill is the same guy I saw come out of high school, same guy I saw at Brigham Young. He's a bolter. He doesn't have a lot of patience. And almost like you can hear the clicks in his head about, okay, my primary man's covered. Let me take off and run with it. And so he's fighting this at this stage. And he's going to look good in preseason because he can run. And he's a really good athlete. But in a regular NFL game, that's not going to work. And so I think this was a short-term, long-term move by the Saints to solidify the quarterback position. And, you know, I do think that you will have an extension of that contract for Bridgewater. And I think this is the first legitimate move by Peyton and the Saints to bring in the heir apparent to Drew Brees.
Probably didn't think you'd get two questions about backup quarterbacks, but you know where I'm based, and there's been a lot of attention here in Mississippi this offseason on and the preseason on Chad Kelly and the success he's had in Denver. From what you've seen and what you hear from your NFL contacts around the league, he's going into the season as the number two quarterback in Denver. Has he put himself in position to get into the conversation to one day be a starting quarterback in the league?
Yeah, it's interesting with him. They had a lot of people that really believed in Chad. Again, the injuries, off-the-field issues, you know, certainly sunk his boat on draft day. But, man, you can see the talent, the arm talent. And he's, you know, he's got some mobility skills, understanding the game a little bit better. His maturity, I think, has come apart himself there, that he's really done a good job and put himself in a spot here to eventually one day be a starter in the NFL. And I don't think anybody knew. I don't think anybody ever questioned his arm talent. I think, you know, a couple times you watch him throw and say, that guy can throw an NFL pass, and all of them real quick. I think it was maybe some of the other elements of his game, the mental toughness part of overcoming adversity and that sort of thing. And just maybe, you know, he sort of find a bad issue somewhere here or there off the field. But, man, he is talented, and he can sling it. I mean, he's got a rocket for an arm. So I think he certainly put himself in a position to one day be a starter in the National Football League. He's a really talented young man, and I don't think that the question of talent was ever in question. I think it was more or less the intangibles with Chad. And some people liked it, and some people dismissed it very quickly. And the NFL is sort of weird on how they grade quarterbacks. I got to be honest with you. Sometimes I shake my head about it, too. You look at the games, and he was healthy. He was a difference maker out on the field for Ole Miss. And so I think he's in the right spot. He's a starter in the NFL.
All right, last couple things, because I really appreciate your time. The week one, I know you'll be – I assume you'll be in New Orleans watching Tampa and New Orleans. What's the game or two that in week one that you're most interested in, not necessarily because of the outcome of the game, but because of what that game might tell you about those teams?
I'm interested in Atlanta, because I think the early season for them will be interesting to watch. They've had a horrific preseason. But I've always felt preseason is nothing more. It's the biggest mirage in the world. I always look for individual play, because if you're looking for team play, some coaches just don't look at it the same way the fan or a media guy would look at it. And so Atlanta is the one team I want to keep an eye on, because I got a feeling whoever wins the NFC South may end up winning it all. And I think it's going to be a dogfight between New Orleans and Atlanta, between those two teams. The other team is the Rams. They were the surprise team a year ago. And they've got a lot of different personalities now on that team, with Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, Ndamukong Suh. And now you've taken care of Donald, which you should have. I still don't get what was the holdup to begin with. And Sean McVay reminds me of a young Sean Payton, in that he's got that type of fertile mind to know how to use people, and he brings in Brandon Cooks. So I think they got the best shot to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs because of the division that they're in, with a lot of question marks in Arizona. Who knows what you're going to get in Seattle now that defense is no longer there. And San Francisco made a run hard late last year with Jimmy Garoppolo, but now you got film on him.
Yeah.
You know, now those defensive coordinators, they know how good he is. I think the Rams have the path to have the best overall record. But the personalities in handling that, when you've got a team full of them, like what they do, is going to be real interesting to watch. So I think this week in watching the Falcons, watching the Rams, are intriguing to me, because I do believe that that's where you can sort of see this sort of settling out in the NFC. In the AFC, the Los Angeles Chargers, no matter how bad they played against the Saints, they're a really talented football team. They've had some injuries, but you got Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon, a really good receiving core with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. You got a rebuilt offensive line. All you're going to hear is watch out when you play against them, because I don't think there's a better defensive end tandem in the league than Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. So they putting the heat on you. Their kicking game comes through for them. They got a chance to win the AFC West and move into the playoffs. And I think New England's vulnerable this year. Without, you look at the talent they have on defense, and they're a double-digit winning team, but they're not as dominant this year. They're not going to be as they have been in years past. You look at their receiving core, then you also have the injury part with Sony Michel. The Chargers, to me, are an interesting team because they got a lot of pieces in place. So early on, it would certainly be the two L.A. teams, Chargers, Rams, Falcons. Now I'll be in the press box and doing pregame and post, but it is what it is. You understand who your rivals are in the NFC. And, man, they have bulked up big time. And this is the ultimate personnel arms race to see who can accumulate the most talent in the NFC. But out west, you got a team that could maybe make a hard run at this in January, and the L.A. Chargers.
It all starts tonight, the Falcons at the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles. So here, last thing, and I think you may have just answered it. Am I correct in saying if you had to make a Super Bowl pick right now, which is almost impossible, I realize that, just the Wednesday after Labor Day before the whole thing gets started and injuries and everything else that will play into it over the course of the season, you would go Chargers versus either New Orleans or Atlanta?
That's it. I think either New Orleans or Atlanta come out of that a pretty strong unit, and they get in there. Now, for Saints fans, nothing would be better than to win the NFC and play in the Super Bowl in Atlanta. Man, the Atlanta fans, they couldn't talk trash to Saints fans for the next 20 years for that. Now, here's the ultimate nightmare. And Atlanta wins, and you know, the Saints played the Panthers three times last year. I wouldn't be surprised you see the same scenario happen with Saints-Falcons this year, that you see them play three times. And, man, those games were really good last year between both the Saints and the Falcons. And I wouldn't be surprised you see these teams square off against one another twice in the regular season, one in the postseason. But nightmare for Saints fans is Atlanta wins that playoff game and they get to the Super Bowl and play it in their own backyard, so to speak. Because eventually, you know, that's going to happen. You almost had it happen this year with Minnesota. And eventually, that's going to happen in the NFL, where you're going to have, you know, a decision made 5 years earlier and a team get there. And I think Atlanta, I know Saints fans may not want to hear it, but they're awfully good. I mean, they're a really good football team. And I think either New Orleans or Atlanta will end up being in that Super Bowl.
Well, Mike, thanks so much for the time. It's great stuff. Enjoy the season. Good luck on Sunday. I know your work there at WWL will be fantastic. Saints and Bucks at noon on Sunday. The pregame earlier in the day and the postgame immediately afterwards. So thanks again for the time, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much. And the Saints win big Sunday, too. Great talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Again, our thanks to Mike Dettillier. Great stuff from him, as always. Really appreciate having him on. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy week two of the college football season. Enjoy week one of the NFL. Starts Thursday, goes through Monday. Lots of football for you to enjoy if you're making the trip to Oxford this weekend for Ole Miss and Southern Illinois. Drive carefully. And we'll be back with you next week. Maybe turn our attention a little bit to some of the baseball pennant races. Of course, we'll always talk college football. Get Ryan Brown back on here soon and start looking ahead to a huge weekend, the third weekend in September, a huge weekend of college football. Auburn hosting LSU, Ole Miss entertaining Alabama, other games on that slate as well. So there'll be a lot of things to talk about on the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal. Until then, thanks for joining us. Take care.